We just interviewed
Raven Simone and Miranda Madej. Raven Simone, who you may know as Raven Simone.
Right. But it is actually Raven Simone and Miranda Madej, who is her wife and partner in business and life. I want to know, who did you relate to more?
For the first third of the conversation, neither of them.
Right.
For the second third, probably Raven. And then for the final third, probably Miranda.
That's so interesting.
What do you think about that?
I just think there is something that happens when two people are having their relationship in real time in front of you. That's exactly why I wanted to ask, because I felt like I could have watched that play. It was like listening to couples therapy. They are very verbal and open about their relationship and the highs and lows. And it's a living document. It is not, you know what I mean? This is not like sealed up. This is an ongoing process. I thought that was really interesting.
I didn't know you knew them. All right. I mean, I didn't know you had
met them.
You don't like know them.
No.
I've never met Raven Simone ever before. Obviously have felt like I've known her forever, you know?
Yeah.
Like I had to go Google to make sure she didn't go to Spelman because I thought maybe for some reason she just felt present, like where I went to college. She was in my house as a child, like through the TV, all that stuff.
I think it's a really interesting interview because those two, they bring the crackling energy between the two of them to the conversation. And yet it didn't seem to like escalate. You know what I mean? Like, it seems like they kind of pass that ball back and forth. And in the end, I came away feeling like there is a real balance between them, which made me feel like these two are totally going to go to the distance because there is that balance. I was really excited by what Raven revealed at the end about feeling judged and seen and watched as part of a couple. And make the listeners listen to it. But I thought that was really interesting. Listen for some interesting revelations there and about how Raven tried to quit her. Couldn't do it. She couldn't do it. She couldn't quit. So here they are, Raven Simone and Miranda Madej. Hi, how are you? It's fun to see you guys chat. I met these ladies last year and these two were like out of a room full of, I don't know, 250 people crammed in, only two wearing masks. Mm. And guess who turned up with COVID the next day?
Oh.
Or 2 days later. I got COVID at that thing.
It was a super spreader. You and 50 other people.
Yeah. So you guys, you look like rock stars. Very smart in the end. But I had a great time talking. I thought I had a great time talking to Miranda because I always like talking to the people that are considered like the plus one.
She raved about you for the next year.
No, Julie, because you know what was so awesome to me was that you got it. And a lot of people don't get it, let alone see me. You know what I'm saying? And you really were like, spouses are really important people or partners are really important and you guys don't get enough attention. And, you know, it was just really kind and generous. And you made me feel like I was worthy of, you know, being in that room as well. And it was really kind. I was just like, wow, Julie is a real one. She's
Thank
got it.
Thank you. Well, I am.
How'd that go with the mask? What did Julie just walk up and start talking?
Pretty much.
Yeah. I mean, Julie and I both had mutual love for each other. That's how that started. And mm-hmm. then I think I got pulled away by a suit of some kind. Mm-hmm. And then Julie definitely did her magic. And,
we were talking about like your pregnancies for a minute because you're a birth doula. And
when you get in good with the wife, you get in good with everyone. You know what I mean? It's like, that's how you make relationships.
I think so. I think there's strategy there. And Julie knew the strategy. She was like, you just got it though, because you also shared a little bit about your experience with your husband and how, you know, I think you had some perspective on if maybe things had been a little bit different, then things could have felt different in certain scenarios. And it was just cool. But I was like, that woman is a spitfire. She's an awesome ball of energy. She's beautiful. She's funny. Like, let's be friends. And then you DM'd Raven, and Raven
and then
check
I suck
DMs.
As a human. And I suck
don't
as a
check
human.
My DMs either. That it's a long process for me to do that. Chad was just asking me right before this. Said, what would you do?
I said, what? How would you have enjoyed a life where you were married to Julie Bowen and you yourself were, you know, like an accountant or a teacher, just a person? You know, how would
like
you enjoy
person.
That?
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I feel like, so I, once upon a time, I used to date the incomparable David Spade, and I was acting, but everybody would always, whenever I was with him, they were like, I remember meeting Judge Judy we were at some restaurant and she's like, David, we have to hang out. Have your girls set it up, points to me. And I was like, they think I'm the assistant. I'm something. And it just made me sort of laugh. I didn't really care, but I thought it was a little boring that my voice didn't matter. That's the part that I don't care if you think I'm famous, but I do have a voice. And I think that the plus one, as it is, should be able to speak.
I've had multiple situations with past girlfriends where I would be in a conversation and that person only talks to me and doesn't even shake their hand. I'm like, this is my partner, blah, 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 blah. And like, even we'll be in meetings now. And now the industry's starting to see that we are a duo in business and things of that nature. But we were just in a meeting the other day and they just focused all their attention on me in the conversation. And I felt so uncomfortable for both of us that I just started fixing her hair and like looked to her lovingly. And then I was like, and babes. And when she talks, she goes. And they were like, oh, we are so sorry. We weren't expecting that. And it is. It's like that preconceived notion, like, don't worry about the partner. It's about the quote unquote famous person. And that's so disrespectful and rude. You'd think that people were raised better.
I understand both sides of it, though. And I think that there are people who like they recognize people, right? So like people recognize Raven and they already feel this connection to her. And therefore they want to have a conversation with her. And I am a stranger and I get that. And I've also been truly in the role of an assistant. I've personal assisted. I've had those jobs where really the goal is to make your boss's life easier and not really be seen and not take up space.
Right.
And I can juggle both sides, but I do think that like in social settings or where I am there as Raven's date, it does feel really nice when somebody takes a little extra time just to get to conversate or get to know me. And I think that's across the board. It doesn't matter if you're famous or not famous. Like if you're going anywhere with your partner and it's kind of like their territory, you want to be welcomed in. You want to feel like you have...
Like I said, somebody needs to have some home training. And it's like these people out in LA don't always have home training.
But again, people have tunnel vision, you know? And I've had that experience too, Julie, where people are like, okay, set it up. You know, you do it. And I'm like, oh, that's not... But then part of me in my assistant brain will kick in and I'll be like, totally. Yeah. On it. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like,
it's good.
It's just.
Yeah. Because you want to be supportive and loving, but at the same time, it's different. I think you and I talked about it, Miranda, that had my ex, at a certain point, he was like, you don't need me at those events. I'm invisible. I'm going to stay home. And I was like, oh, I get it. That's fine. But then you do start to have these different lives and you do start to kind of, not that you have to do every single thing together, but to have that bond, to go through those evenings together, which are fun and horrible in every single way, it's important.
We have a really good like eye contact now that we've been married a little bit longer. Like we were again in an, I wouldn't say an event, more like a meeting, and we were playing footsie because our brains were
on the same
page.
Same wavelength.
And you know, I hate it when people do that to her. And there's also the side of it is I need her there. I need her there for when, not when I'm not talking to anybody, but just for emotional support because I really don't like those events. So I'm saying this now, like if it gets to that point where you hate it, babes, can you just like come with me anyway? Because I don't like being there by myself.
Of course. And I think that for sure, I think that something too is like we can't control the people around us, right? Like, but Raven and I can have a conversation beforehand and it's like, if I feel connected to her and I feel seen by her, then how the rest of the room treats me is really none of my business. And I've kind of been able to do that too. So I don't go into things with expectation. Now, where things have gotten interesting for us, and again, I can't fault the world, I just kind of popped up one day, right? People are all of a sudden like, whoa, Raven's married. Who's this white girl that she has? Like, nobody knows anything about me. Then people are Googling me. And what they think they find is the truth, which is I'm a social media manager, which
nowhere near.
Not the truth. Like all of these crazy, funny things. But now we've started kind of to merge into working together. And I think the only time that there's been this part of me where I like, you know, want to cross my arms and stomp my feet and be like, hey, I'm here too, is when we have these projects that I'm equally a part of, or yeah. I've actually created or written. And I'm like, yo, hello,
I did this.
But it won't, I know that once, you know, I'm seen, once those projects are out and up, then I'll have a whole different respect from people. But, you know, I don't know.
It takes a minute.
It takes a minute.
She gonna get there.
It's okay. Mm-hmm. It's all good.
The question I was gonna ask was, you mentioned that you all are partners in business. I was gonna ask, what's the nature of the relationship? It sounds like a creative relationship and like maybe production partners. Can you tell us more about that?
We have a production company. We create IP. We also kiss and make great entrees. We also travel together.
Miranda looks shocked right now.
I was like, where is she going with this?
Our relationship is multifaceted. I braid her hair at night and also give her notes on acting. It's a full-rounded relationship.
That is a full-rounded relationship. That's like every slice of the pie. What's the most difficult part of that whole thing? That's every dimension of the spectrum.
It is every dimension of the spectrum. What's the most difficult part?
Me getting used to doing that for me.
Sharing? Like, sharing?
Not just sharing. I'm really good at sharing. Uh-huh. I am. What I have a problem, I've just been alone in my business aspect for so long that even growing up, I was told, don't let your partners involved because you don't know how the relationship's going to go. And when you get a divorce, you have to give them half. Like that was the looming cloud over my whole childhood about relationships. And so marrying her, one of her childhood fantasies was to marry someone that she could also work with. So we compromised. I was like, okay, well, you can have a few years of my work relationship life. And as things grow for us and kind of grow legs in our productions and anything else, then we can find our footing as individuals within the world we create. So I'm a director. She's a producer. I'm an artist. She's actually a painter too in her own little world. And so that is the hardest part for me, having to be like, okay, everything that I was taught when I was younger, I have to throw it out of the window because my wife wants this. And it's kind of bumped a little bit. But the thing is that she's a go-getter. So for instance, our podcast, she was the lead lion on getting that deal done. And I just sat back. So that one was easy for me, you know, her wanting to be a guest star on That's So Raven background on that, on Raven's Home. I was like, I don't know if we could do that.
That was really a joke, to be honest.
Was it? Wait a minute. You were going to deny her the unique pleasure of standing around all day, getting fed like worse. Being herded into background holding. What was going on there, Raven?
No, it felt a little too close to home. I was like, Raven's home is mine. We'll do podcasts together. I like individuality, but I've definitely, being in a relationship with her, have learned how important it is to combine us.
Yeah.
I just grew up differently. You know, my blueprint of relationship was, you know, separate kind of things. And then you guys come together for fun stuff. Like I have a different blueprint of relationships, but I'm learning.
And Miranda, what was your blueprint? How did you grow up?
The messaging that I got when it came to relationships was find a person that you really like. Find a person that you can be friends with. Find a person that you enjoy. And then the rest will kind of unfold. My parents got divorced when I was 7 years old. And my mom, I think in her post-divorce life, reflecting back, kind of had these strong messages just about like how to be a good partner, how to have balance. But what I took away from that was, if you are married to somebody that you also have this strong friendship with, that you're also like growing and building together, you also have this teammate, then it's such a privilege in my mind to have the opportunity to work with somebody, to play with somebody. And I think that it can be a bit romanticized or idealized by me in terms of, you know, let's work together, whatever. But when you have a job as big as yours or as big as Raven's, you are in it a lot. You have to give a lot of yourself. So part of what I was thinking is like, if I'm part of that too, to an extent, then we get to spend more time together, because there are days where she'll be gone all day or having to travel or whatever it is. And it's like, if I'm not somehow woven into that fabric a little bit and my skill set also aligns into this, then we will be spending, we'll have really separate lives. It's kind of like what you were saying earlier with your husband.
Yeah, grow apart. Yeah.
You grow apart.
But then I have the mindset of absence makes the heart grow fonder. If I miss you all day, I'm going to be jumping on top of you when I get home. Well, you know what I mean? Like, that's that part for me.
My dad always said his idea of the perfect relationship, and it kind of always stuck with me. He said, sometimes for breakfast, never for lunch, always for dinner. Yeah. And it was this idea that you got, you know, you go off and you do your own thing, but you always come together at the end of the day to talk about it. But that's great, except when you're dating or married to somebody in this industry who has a 17-hour shoot or has to fly here, there, and the other, all of a sudden, it falls apart. So you got to kind of make the extra time.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I just found out that because of the writer's strike, we're not going to finish the last episodes. And I got up and did laundry today. Oh, no worries. I got up and did laundry today. And she was like, wait a second, hold on. I still want to do my wife's laundry. I said, I don't have to work anymore. So now things go back 50-50. I'm going to be like, I have to find that.
No, that's a little different. Done laundry in the entirety of our relationship. So
First of all, I have. You just weren't there. But I'm bringing up a point. Do you remember the episode in Shrinking when the guy who retired came home and she was like, I'm not used to you being here.
It's very real.
It's very real. Like, I haven't been home. I'm not home from 8 a.m. to like 6 p.m. I come home and that's it. And I sit on the couch and I don't do shit.
Right.
Like, I have to find my way of feeling important at home too. So babes, I need some chores to
do. That's totally fine. And I'll say this. It's a hard adjustment for both of us, because as much as I love being with Raven, I also love it when she leaves. So that like that time apart where honestly, older me, or I mean like me in the past, a lot of that was insecure attachment. That was separation anxiety. Right. That was like, if I'm not always there, then something bad will happen. And that's ingrained from my little girl self. And as I've gotten now almost 3 years into marriage, feeling more secure and understanding
this
relationship.
She's like, get the fuck out of my kitchen.
No, it's like I've really come to love my space and my time. And I think that Raven and I are yesterday she worked all day and it was great. Like I wasn't, seriously, no, I mean, I'm a little nervous about this show being over for you.
Oh, it's okay. I'm gonna be on the couch painting. Don't worry about it.
Yeah, it's fine. Like we find our ways. But I think that I'm all about balance across the board. I think that working together and having great projects that we love, like we'll share our podcast together. Yeah. But it's also super important that like Raven has her directing separate of me and that I have my writing separate of her. And, you know, if I go back into doula work, I'll have that separate of route. So there's like, that is crucial.
It takes growth though, to your point, babes. I think that takes growth. I think that takes like a certain person. Not everybody can handle that. And like Julie was saying, it's like the industry that we're in, I don't think I'd be able to have that kind of relationship with you if you weren't in it beforehand, understanding those little nuances that are so important.
I used to always say, I mean, and I say it now, like, if I'm ever in a relationship again, I'd be like, I can't go on location alone, but I want to. Like, I'm like, no, I don't want you. It's too much stress to have somebody there. I'm on location. I'd like dealing with a shitty hotel in the middle of nowhere, whatever. You don't want to be there. It's fine. I got this. Don't worry. And then it's like my own relationship suicide that I don't realize that I'm committing slowly because, you just start to grow. You're starting to have you start to talk about people that the other person's never going to meet or is never going to see. And that is a really, I just think that that is, that's my own shortcoming that I've done in the past. And I am on location again right now. I'm working in Georgia and I'm like, I'm so glad I'm not in a relationship because I would tank it. I know what I would do right now by accident.
I'm the exact opposite. So I was on Broadway for 6 months. I was in a relationship at the time. And for more than half of that time, my partner didn't come. And they visited. And we had a great relationship because we kept in contact. We kept the conversation going. But then when I got home, it was like a brand new relationship because I hadn't seen that person in forever. But as we get older, I think there is a thing of like, let me get out there, let me set my roots really fast and then come visit. And if we have kids, bring the kids for sure. But let me get my footing because let's not forget, it's work.
Right.
And work is not personal. Work is personal for me, but it's not a part of our personal relationship. So I would definitely like to split that up. It's like, let me get my grounding. If I'm there for 6 months, let me be there for like a month and a half, come out and visit, then go back, come back and come back. Because for me, it's distracting if my partner's there. Like I have to make sure that they're okay. And I have to make sure that they're taken care of. And I can't really pay attention to myself. And our work is very selfish to be 100.
It is.
And yeah. So I have the exact opposite.
Selfish in what sense?
Selfish that like, oh my goodness, like it's about me. Like I'm a star and I need to make sure that my seat is it clean? Am I number one or number two on the board? Like it's so selfish in the sense of, you know, even when I'm in my trailer, if my wife is there before I am, then she's setting it up to her personal standards or what she thinks I might want instead of me doing it myself. And there's always going to be a difference between how somebody folds their underwear, no matter how long you've been with somebody, because it's just a different person. And
why would I go before you? Why wouldn't I just arrive with you and then help you fold your underwear your way?
Because even then it's like, no, I want to fold my underwear my way. And then we'll do it because I'm sharing that space with you here at home on a base level. That's like, oh my goodness, I get to move out of the house for a second. Let me just set up my house the way it is, my little apartment for that. She does not like this conversation.
I can see
this. The daggers and the eyes are so dangerous. I'm going to shut the fuck up now.
I think that it's really interesting. It feels like we're like, it's like Esther Perel, you know, that relationship expert that does like actual real time, like couples therapy on our podcast.
Danger. God.
Who wins? Have you ever, Raven, have you ever lost an argument as in said, okay, your way? Your way wins.
With
her?
Yes. She's a Leo.
We both do that.
Yeah, but I always give in. I'm sorry, I'm in therapy. I don't always give in. I think I give in more than she does.
I was going to say, I find that heated. So hard to believe.
Yeah. I do too. As I'm watching it, I'm like, but that would make sense. I find it hard to believe watching the two of you that Raven ever gives in. But at the same time, this relationship wouldn't work unless there's a dynamic that we don't see where Miranda is like, has a steelier core than we know about.
Oh yeah. She's super steel.
I mean, I'm really this is what I know about myself. I'm strong and I've been through a lot of stuff that has made me have to be really strong and resilient, but Raven is really stubborn. And I feel like in our dynamic, there are definitely times when I am like my way or the highway, but I also have no issue admitting to being wrong. And I also feel like I give, which Raven, you have a hard time doing.
I do not have a hard time saying I'm wrong.
I feel like you do.
No, I don't. I say it before you even say I'm wrong. I'm like, listen, I forgot.
But that doesn't, I forgot doesn't mean I'm wrong.
Yes, like, it does. Because normally I'm saying that I'm right within the memory that I have. But if I say I forgot, I misremembered, that means I'm wrong. You have a hard time saying you're wrong, Leo, because of the conversation last week.
I don't know what the conversation last week is, but I don't have
Julie, put your hand down.
I can't. I love it.
I'm enjoying this so much.
It's so real. And listen, kudos to the both of you for being so real. Do you feel a pressure obviously as a couple that's in public, but you're also a biracial gay couple? Does that up the ante of what the expectation, do you feel that expectation that you have to represent something or you need to make your relationship work out on a level, like that the stakes are higher for you in some way?
I don't think that it ups the ante because of what people are watching. I think it ups the ante because we both have such broken views of what relationships of in our family life has been. So it's important to us to keep our relationship going so that we don't follow the generational patterns that we've been a part of. When it comes to the public, I think we have a good subconscious knowing of what we feel comfortable talking about and what we don't feel comfortable talking about. I feel like we do not walk into any conversation saying we have to represent for the multiracial lesbians because then I know that I'll mess up and probably get fired from The View again. You know what I mean? Like, I definitely just am myself with her, with a mask, obviously, because we don't put our entire personal life out there. Like, even the thing that we had the conversation about last week, I think that's just enough to where we can have a real conversation, but y'all not going to know what it's about. You know right. what I mean? Like, you're not going to know what it's about.
I don't even know what it's about, to be honest.
It's fascinating to watch you all kind of negotiate everything in real time. Raven, I came in with this question for you, which is like, it's like the question I have to ask. Like, I've been looking at you since both of us were babies, basically. And we have a dossier on you here, on both of you. And so we have like background information and stuff like that. Something you said, I can't even locate it on this dossier, but it was basically, you don't know what it's like to not be famous. You don't have anything to compare it to. I don't know what it's like to be famous, but I've been around famous people enough that I could probably, I have my takes, like I have my point of view. What's your point of view on what it's like to not be famous now that you are in partnership with someone who's not? I'm sure you've been around tons of people at this point who aren't. Like, what? I don't know. What do you think?
Raven has never been around anyone who's not famous. So this is very, this is very new for her. Raven only, and see, I am a little famous, okay? Or she wouldn't be around me. Just let you know, Chad. Just kidding.
Hilarious. What is it like not being famous? I mean, I've dated some people that weren't famous, and I have friends that weren't famous, but it's interesting because even my friends that I'm bringing to mind that I'm like pulling from, they all wanted to be actors, and one of them married someone famous. And like, even when I went to public school, so I was around in middle school and high school, so I was around people that weren't famous, but it just turned out that everyone that I was friends with decided to be in the industry in some kind. Okay, so I don't know if that's like the energy pool. Let me answer your question. Why don't you answer it? Because I don't know how to answer it.
No. I don't think I can answer that for you, but I was going to help remind you. Think of the feeling you might feel when we like go out in public and you're dressed really down. Nobody comes up to talk to you. No one recognizes you and you're just existing. Like, what is, because that's average.
Heaven.
But to me, that's, I mean, even that is like, it's still contextualized by her being herself, because it's like she's getting a break from something that she's normally feeling. I'm curious, but like now every day you look at you're around someone who's not in that experience. I'm curious, like I have my own made up stories about what it's like to be Julie Bowen now, because I spend time with Julie. I ask her a bunch of questions. If someone asked me to, like,
and you're wrong, right?
I'm definitely wrong. No, I'm definitely wrong. I know, but I could, you know, I make it up. You know, it's.
I hear what you're saying, Chad, and it's hard because no one ever in my entire life has ever asked me a question like that. And I have to be careful how to answer it because there are so many different human experiences. People who are not quote unquote famous, but there's still hierarchy of popularity within the human genome. I don't know, the human.
Well, what
structure.
You're really talking about is how we as humans project ideas onto other people. So what you're asking, Raven, to an extent, is like, now that you're married to Miranda and you're seeing her live in the world as a non-famous person, like, what do you think that's like? And that would still be a projection that Raven would have on me of an experience that isn't necessarily.
Yeah, but I mean, but back to what I was saying, in the sense of, you know, even in a workplace setting, you have the boss. That person is famous, and then you have his underlings. And I'm like, okay, how far under are you talking about? Are you talking mailroom? Are you talking assistant? Because ultimately, take away fame, it's like you have an anonymous life. You could walk into a place and bad or good day, that person next to you doesn't know who you are if you've never been in there before. And it depends on the mentality of that human. Are you a person who needs to be known, who needs to be seen, who needs to feel needed? Then that would suck. You know, that would suck walking into that place and nobody knows you. Or are you talking about the boss who walks in and handles their shit? I don't think my brain has ever conceptualized anything less than boss status. And so, but at the same time, very respectful. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. I could see myself running a company of sticky notes. You know, I see, okay, yeah. I get up, I put my suit on, I go, I got people underneath me and I'm running the show, you know? Working for someone? I'm not even going to put that in my brain, no offense. I'm not gonna do that.
But you do work for someone and it's a big corporation, but particularly someone as vocal as you are, someone who's been paid to be vocal and opinionized and have opinions on The View, to you do have a boss. And there's a certain image as a Disney kid that, like, yeah, you already broke out just by nature of being gay.
That boss that you're talking about, that boss doesn't even talk to me because the person who gave me those parameters were my parents.
Ah. Mm.
And I think that's why I've worked for Disney for so long, because they don't have to tell me that.
Because you already had, that you came in with that ingrained, hardwired.
Yeah, that's what I was raised to be. So yes, I'm working for that boss, and I actually want to turn this on its head a little bit. I love you, boss. However, you put me and him in a room, you're going to have a different long line coming up if we have to sign autographs. You know what I mean?
Right.
The masses, the children are going to come to me and then I'm going to be signing. And, you know, the adults maybe with suits will go to him.
The other
executives will go to him. I'm the one who's more famous in that scenario, but the perception makes my ego a little bit stronger.
But that's also back to what you were saying about kind of this like hierarchy of things.
Yeah.
Like you, studio systems are really interesting. You know, like you have your CEOs and your big time executives and the people who are making the decisions and the people that are earning tons of money and
you'll never know their face.
They're behind the scenes, but they're big time behind the scenes players. And you are in front of the camera and therefore you just have more exposure,
yeah,
which you can have a harder time going into a grocery store than a big boss maybe, but there's still this hierarchy of people understanding who people are their positions and then feeling certain types of way and ego and all of these things that come into.
Like I know who pays my checks and I am very kind. Babes, we got to make them some candy and send it to them. You know what I mean? Like I know exactly who
does
my checks.
Oh, and also you are very, very, like I watch, it's interesting because for me, I have not been famous, like kind of taking your question, Chad, and answering it from my perspective. I haven't been famous, but I've grown up with my father worked at Warner Brothers, started at CBS when I was first born, and then was at Warner Brothers for 30 years. So I've been around like big time people, executives, all of the, I know that language. I understand how everything behind that world works. And I have a lot of confidence and comfort in those environments. And Raven,
I grew up in Georgia.
Grew up differently. And like where I will go into a room with all the suits and be super confident and like, hi, how are you? What's going on? She will, hello, sir. So nice to see you. And it's such a shift. And it's so interesting because I'm like, wow, I have all of this kind of like, hey, what's up? Because it just feels comfortable. And then Raven will kind of take these steps back. So I think that like,
because you also have to make powerful people feel safe.
In
my head, it's like, if I walk in with my, what up? I can't really say that to the man.
Well, I'm not saying walk in, what up? I'm saying walk in, hi, how are you? Eye contact, whatever. My point is that I'm comfortable in those environments.
Yeah.
And although I've never been famous, what I do have is this kind of ingrained sense of comfort in the public eye and
in
around
those
people, yeah, which is interesting because
and
it's
I
actually—
And I don't, because I didn't grow up like that.
It's not really my like full experience. Like I've never— I'm not famous, but I sometimes feel like, oh yeah, I can do it. Like, let's go. Like, it doesn't, you know, whatever. I don't know. Am I
understand. It makes
do
sense.
You guys get me? Julie, you're like, yes, no.
There's something in there that like flittered across my mind and I just don't know if it's accurate or not. And I don't want, it's and I'm just going to spitball this and jump on me and tell me I'm wrong
if I'm wrong.
But that there's kind of it's kind of a privilege. Like you grew up with the privilege of having access to the C-suite, you know, to the business, to the execs, you know, Miranda. And I know you went to that, an independent school here in California. You were surrounded by kids who came from affluent families and everything. So there's a certain degree of a privilege of knowing that when you walk in a room as a graduate of that school and your dad works at Warner Brothers and you've learned how to shake hands, firm handshake, look people in the eye. That's exactly the way my kids are raised. Firm handshake, look people in the eye. That is, you belong there. You belong in any room you walk into. Then there's a total power shift when then it comes to entertainment and you don't necessarily belong on every set that Raven walks in. Raven belongs on that set. Raven walks on as a director and actor, and she has that going on. But it's interesting the way that there's a balance. And I'm wondering if you guys feel that in your relationship, that balance, like Raven was saying, she's kind of the draw, but you know that you were raised with this. Is that equal footing? Does that help balance the relationship?
I think it balances us. And I think it balances us to where we know that when we are conducting business within our production company, we will succeed. Because like you said, I'm going to go on the set and run the hell out of it. And she's going to be behind the scenes, sometimes in front, but behind the scenes running the hell out of it. And, you know, don't get it twisted. It's like the universe knows who to pit people together, no matter what your story ends up being, you're going to learn from that person. And I think me seeing her in her element in a room full of people, I'm like, holy snap, you know these people? This is crazy. I know B2K, like we could be on tour together, you know what I mean? So it helps me raise my confidence vibration in that category. And then for her, I'm guessing, you know, being in a room with the people that I feel confident with, I can help her in that area. And we play off of each other. I mean, there's one of the people that I, you know, have adopted as family is Gary Marsh, and he used to run Disney. And I used to talk to him all the time. She's like, you call him this? And I'm like, yeah. And she's like, I know him. And when he met her, he was like, I love her. I speak her language. I understand it. This is perfect for you.
And then things come back to like, I get these stories like, when I was starting out, I pitched this idea to your dad and he didn't let, you know, like I got a lot of those stories and then people feel closer to me. But I think that—
I'm sorry to interrupt you, but I just want to get this final thing out. It's like, I worked my way up to get where I am. She was born into it. And that's just a different mentality.
Well, I wouldn't say I was born into it per se, because I didn't know where I was going to land. I mean, I definitely, like, my parents chose their jobs, right? Both my parents wanted to be in entertainment. They're born in Buffalo, New York. My mom was a young actress. My dad was a director. Like, they worked really hard. And I think that—
You were born into it. You were born.
But I wasn't born being like, I'm going to be an actor and here you go. And now it's like—
No, you're just born into that affluent type of life. I wasn't.
Yeah, yes, for sure. That is true. And like Julie was saying, there is definitely a privilege that comes with that. There's access. But I also have parents who are extremely grounded and humble. And I wasn't one of those people. Like my mom drove like a Toyota Camry my whole life and everyone else was like in Range Rovers and whatever. Like there were definitely moments for me where I felt like, oh gosh, like am I not up to snuff? Which is back to kind of what you were saying, Julie, about this sense of like feeling like I'm worthy of being in the room. I go so back and forth because there are times in myself, and this is truly specific to me and my growth and work as a person, but like I have these self-confidence issues and I will come into some rooms and I'll feel completely invisible. And that will make me feel frustrated in a way because I'm like, what? Like I'm a cool person. If nothing more, I'm nice and I can have a decent conversation. Like I don't maybe have the work or the resume to support that or inspire somebody to want to speak to me. But I feel as though I'm worthy of being here. And then other times I'll walk in like very in my zone, very in my element. And it's kind of like, you can't, I'm a dog with a bone. Like you can't get in my way. But it's interesting because I'm in inner conflict in a lot of these things a lot of the time. And that's where it comes back to Raven and I. If Raven welcomes me in, if Raven's like, be in my trailer, be around, then I instantly feel more secure and comfortable because I feel like she wants me there. And there are times when it's clear, kind of like the setting up of the trailer or whatever she was saying, like she doesn't. She wants to go out on her own and be independent and do her thing. And then I'll feel more hesitation into where I can come, if that makes sense.
The question that's coming to mind is, if you don't mind me asking, how long have y'all been together?
No worries. You can totally ask.
It doesn't mean we'll answer.
We will.
You don't have to.
We met in 2015, dated for 8 months, broke up for 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, broke up for 5 years?
No, what? We didn't. No.
No, we broke up for how long?
We were apart for three.
I don't count.
Oh, wow.
Apart for 3 years, and now we've been together for 3 years.
Why?
So, 3 years and 8 months.
Why did I ask that? Is that the question, Julie?
No, I want to know why they broke up.
Oh.
Take it away, honey. She broke my heart.
It's multifaceted.
Good question, Julie.
Well, the name of the show is Quitters, and this is a real good quit. You quit.
Oh, I was quitting. I quit.
You quit she her. Quit heart. And but I why? Quit
heart. Multiple reasons. Okay, main two. You. The main two. One, she asked too many damn questions, and she was trying to get all up in my emotional feels, and I wasn't ready to do that
yet. Which is how you develop intimacy in a relationship.
Which, not when you're trying to be a hoe, and I was trying to be a hoe, so that's not new for me.
Wait, were you newly, I know you said you knew you were gay from an early age, but was this, as you, your self-proclaimed hoe period, like when you were just like, I'm gonna run around with a bunch of women because sexually I want to have a bunch of different experiences. Is that what you're referring
to?
No, I was
a serial monogamist.
Oh, okay.
So I had already had two relationships, really long-term relationships before I met Miranda and some fun times in between. And so the other facet of it was this weird, unconscious, like, voice in my head that every time we held hands in public, Black people were judging me that I was holding the hand of a white girl.
Wow. Okay.
It was not warranted. It was just this old pattern that I guess got passed down subconsciously. I mean, I'm from the South. I'm from Atlanta, Georgia. My mom's from Louisiana. And, you know, I think there was never any problems in my family, but you hear things, mm-hmm. you know, you hear, I can't believe she with that white girl, oh my God. And it made me feel uncomfortable and it wasn't fair to her because she's such a genuine, beautiful person. And also she asked me too many questions and I was not trying to give up my emotional self. But I'm okay now, I'm in therapy.
Raven loves her therapy. I felt bad because I had no idea. Raven didn't communicate. She was not a strong communicator at that point in time. And I am a very verbal person, yes. And I very much was like, tell me about your childhood. Tell me about these things. Like, I am curious about people. I want to know why people do the things they do, why they think the way they think. And not from a place of judgment at all, just from a place of curiosity and learning. It's the writer in me. I think human behavior and motivation is super interesting.
It felt invasive at the time.
And it felt really invasive to her, which I can understand. But I felt sad when I heard her share this story about us being different colors and how that impacted her because I had never heard that before. And really, it came up after we had gotten married. And I was like, oh my God, like you never share that with me. And
because it's rude and it's unnecessary. Like it's so old
thinking. But I don't think it, I mean, I don't think it is rude personally. I think it's probably a really real thing and having any kind of discomfort in your relationship or with your partner is worthy of discussion. But it is a thing. And I didn't even notice it until after we were married. Like I think, well, people didn't know we were dating when we were dating, but there have been a lot of people who have had criticisms about the fact that Raven is married a white person.
Wait a minute. Is it more controversial that Raven, that you married a white woman or that you're gay?
White woman.
Gay.
I remember finding out that Raven Simone is gay and going, you know, that was big news.
Yeah, I ruined a lot of people's childhood, supposedly.
And didn't ruin my childhood, but you were you were the royal family of, you were the Black royal family of television. The Cosbys were, you guys were it. So that had to be a big deal. So I'm, which was bigger?
Oh my God, I never thought about that. Which one's deeper for me?
I think it would probably, I mean, I don't want to speak for you, but
I've had crush on white women my whole life.
I think it would be your sexuality.
I think it's my sex. Because, honey, Claire from Clueless. Honey.
Claire? Do you mean Cher?
I mean Cher. I'm sorry.
She does no name.
I do. I got
Can
emotional.
You admit you were wrong? Can you say it?
I was wrong, Miranda.
Yeah, Alicia Silverstone's
Alicia
character.
Alicia Silverstone, honey. Don't play with me. I was, honey, I had a crush ever since. But I also grew up in a neighborhood in Atlanta that was very mixed. So there, nobody was, I mean, actually, it wasn't very mixed. It was predominantly white, actually. And there was like three Black people.
Can I ask, before we move too far off of it, just this one question, which, Raven, I want to make sure I understood you. You said, I'm paraphrasing, you felt like when y'all would go places that the Black people were judging you, more or less. I think that's what I heard. And you said it was unwarranted. And I suspected you meant that the feeling that you were being judged was unwarranted. Or did you mean that the judgment was unwarranted?
I think it's both. Like, nobody said anything to me. I just saw faces. You know, we got to read faces in certain moments. And I'm just like, I feel bad for even giving that face energy and letting it enter my field and then taking my hand away from her at that time. I also think it's unwarranted that people should judge whoever I'm talking to, because that's not your relationship, boo. That has nothing to do with you. Mm-hmm. You just over here because you think I'm famous, you can judge me. And I understand we have set the ground to do that, but ultimately, that's your business, boo. I'm about to cut. Get out of here. Nobody's playing with you. And so I think both, but I understand. I understand why people do that, because again, that's the society that we've created. We've created the society where we're all allowed to judge each other openly. And no matter what the person that's getting judged feels, unless that person speaks out. And so maybe I was wrong for, no, I was wrong, babes. You caught it on tape. I was wrong for
need a copy of this.
Internalizing that. I don't want to use the wrong word because I know in some cultures, some like, to me, it's racist, right? So internalizing that racial problem of a Black person being with a white person in a relationship. And I should be able to date whoever I want to because it's a human and it doesn't matter. I hope I answered that right.
Do you think he would have felt? No, I don't think he would.
Who are you? Every time you're like, oh, I don't want to get in trouble, I'm like, it creates a dissonance for me because on the one hand, I think as I've checked in on you over the last 30 years, I've been like, you feel like you, even as a baby, it seems like you always like speak your mind. Like you say how you feel as I have observed it from a distance. And then I hear you like check yourself and be like, oh, fuck, am I going to get in trouble for that? Like, who are you, what trouble matters to you, I guess?
My mom and the people that pay my checks, that put money in my bank account. My wife now. Mm.
Copy.
I mean, 100%, you know what I mean? Like, those are the people that matter to me. I don't want to rock the boat too much because that's my livelihood. That's my family's opinion. And that's my wife's opinion. What do we call each other? I know we're family, but there's two different kinds of families. My mama's family, then us. What's that?
Well, we're not blood.
That's my blood family. And then my love family. You know what I mean? Like I got to keep her happy. And let's not forget, people on Twitter are crazy. You know what I mean? And they'll cancel you in a heartbeat. And I got a career, I got a family to take care of. So yes, I speak my mind, but I also have learned filters.
That was going to be my question to you. Is your perception of yourself, do you feel like you speak your mind publicly? Because I have such a different...
Well, you know me.
I know.
And there's some things I'm not going to say to them that I'm going to say to you.
I understand that. But I'm asking you, do you feel like you are an unfiltered person?
Nah, I got lots of filters. I got the sepia filter on. I got on the black and white filter. I got on a sepia filter. I got on an Instagram filter. I got a Snapchat filter on. I got enough to make sure that we can have a conversation. But I definitely know there's some things, especially learning from The View, that I will never say out
loud.
Let's
talk about, we only have a few minutes left, but I want to hear about that. Because that was like, not necessarily a quit in your life, Raven. And I'd love to hear your take on it as well, Miranda. But you've referenced a couple of times and I sensed a little like a little ouch about your departure from The View.
Yeah. I mean, there was a lot of things that happened on The View that I learned from. I said things that I thought were a safe space, but they weren't. I also experienced a petition to get me fired because of things that I've said. And, you know, it's not like I had an easy go there. So I definitely learned the difference between public speaking and living room conversation. Couch conversation, right? The ones that I have with my wife.
What social contracts did you breach? Like, and I ask that from the point of view of like, it bothers me how much stuff people aren't allowed to say at work that feels honest to them. So what did you step on, if you don't mind? Can you answer that here?
Oh, I refuse to speak about it. You'll never hear me talk about it again, but I will lead you to a recent headline that one of my family just got into it on. I have a play sister in the industry and she said something and now she's under fire for it. And that was couch conversation. And I'm looking at it and my wife tells me, I'm like, you know what? I agree with her. I'll never say it out loud and things of that nature, but couch conversation. Now, let's not get it twisted. I hate the word safe space. Places like this, you're a safe space. Now tell me. I'm like, no. If there's a microphone and you got more than 100 listeners, it's not safe space.
It's not safe.
It's not safe. When I'm in my house and my phones are underneath the pillows and Siri and Alexa is off, it's a safe space.
Oh, my God, kind of.
Kind of, right? And that's my wife. So, yeah, I know the topics to kind of stay away from now. But it's funny because the new generation doesn't give up. Like they don't care at all. But they're also the ones canceling the older generation for saying those things. It's so interesting.
So was there a moment after you had left The View, or you said you were fired from The View? Is that accurate?
No. I don't know how to.
Yeah, I don't know either. That's why I'm asking
you. I'll say it like my publicist would say.
Okay.
There was a mutual understanding of me leaving.
Okay.
Because I was also moving to another show. It was a mutual understanding. That's a
mutual
good,
agreement,
right?
That Raven would
get
leave.
The fuck off the show. Okay. Yeah.
because you were going right on to Raven's Home.
Yes.
Okay. So you never had that moment. I was trying to get you to that moment where you thought it was the dark night of the soul where you're like, shit, I'm done. You never.
The only time I've only had that experience once. The darkest night of my life of a quitting moment.
Okay.
I'll tell you guys, it was really bad for me. I was about to go on a 50-city tour through in stadiums with, I think it was AEG at the time. It wasn't Live Nation. Right. It was another one. I had put in money, my record label, whatever. We won't talk to them. We had stairs. It was the first time I had like a real show and it wasn't just, I mean, I've always had real shows, but like lights and stage stuff and like real tour, you know? And 2 days before we left, the whole tour got canceled. And I don't remember exactly why, because it wasn't like I don't remember exactly why. But what I know was we're energy people. And so when all of your chakras burst, you have overexerted yourself emotionally, physically. And I fell to the ground and laid on the ground for about an hour and couldn't move. And that was the first time I had done anything in the industry that had gotten taken away from me so quick without a negotiation or a conversation beforehand or anything. It was just like, no, you're not going. And I'll never forget that because I'd already had some really tumultuous conversations with my record label. And so my mom came to the rescue. She was like, we're going to go to the same cities and we're going to do fairs. And then I'm known as the fair girl, me and Garth Brooks back in the time, you know, like that's all we did. But it really got me thinking, like, I can't put all of my emotion and heart and soul into these fleeting business deals because you never know what's going to happen. Mm-hmm. And I can't burst my chakras like this every time. I put everything into that fucking show. And even with Raven's Home, even with That's a Raven and things that were moving forward, Miranda's like, are you excited? And I'm like, no, not really. I refuse to give myself that anticipating feeling so I never feel that again.
Yeah.
Can I ask, Raven and Julie, if y'all don't mind, can I ask you both this question? And Miranda, you probably have a point of view on it too, but I know I haven't experienced it. When you have fans of a person who is your character on a TV show, and then you walk off of that set on the last day and you go back to being yourself, and then you walk into another character and then you walk off and you're yourself, like, what percentage, or like how many of the people who love you as the character continue to like love you through the journey? Like how many of them stay with you?
Interesting.
I don't have an answer because I stopped being Claire Dunphy in February 2020, and then we went right into COVID. So in the meantime, I've done some movies and I did a pilot that didn't go. This is the first series that I'm doing right now that is more than the pilot since I did the Modern Family. And it's kind of scary. And it's like the show itself is scary and like kind of like somewhere between Stranger Things and American Horror. And,
ooh.
Right. So like, and I was sending my kids pictures from set the other night and I'm bloody, like stuff's happening. And I don't know. I have no idea. People might love that. A whole new group of you might love that, but there's definitely going to be some people that's like, that's not Claire. That is not Claire. I am not here for it. That is not Claire. Raven's had much more, but since you've been Raven, you've been Raven publicly.
Yeah. Raven.
I'm Raven. Yeah. I will say that's an interesting question, Chad, because starting at 3 years old in a family show and every show after being a family show and not choosing characters, mm-hmm. just choosing personalities with, and it's just not even personality, just being me with other people's words.
Mm-hmm.
I don't feel like my wife and my team hate this. I'm like, I don't call myself an actress. I call myself a comedian because I'm not really changing who I am to be a character. You know, I'm just making sure I make you laugh within the same framework as me. So I feel like my supporters and watchers have followed me for the last 37 years. And it's the grandparents it's the older generation from The Cosby Show. They had kids. They watched me on Cooper. They had kids. They watched me on That's a Raven. And then they had kids and their kids are watching Raven's Home. And sadly, it's like you said, it's pretty much the same character throughout. And I don't have a problem with that because I got my check. But like, they'll follow me. I think I'll know that feeling if I ever decide, which I probably won't, but if I ever decide to do a character that's outside of the framework mm-hmm. of wholesome family entertainment, that's when the judgment comes. That's when people start making their step back.
People, I think, definitely see a differentiation though in Xenon mm-hmm. and Cheetah Girls because—
Oh yeah, boss versus best friend.
Yeah. So, I mean, I haven't seen
And you know,
those.
No one brings up Empire or a Girl Like Grace.
Or Blackish, because you were on Blackish.
Yeah, but I was a lesbian in Blackish. I was just kind of playing myself.
But the other day, it was kind of funny. We were talking about something and then Raven pulled it up on YouTube and she's like, look, watch. And it was her on another Disney show. And she had done this little, and she, you know, she starts doing her bit. And I was like, oh, it's literally Raven Baxter just got plucked and put in this Disney show, which is super cool. Like, I understand how fans would love that, but that actually wasn't the intention. But she's like, yeah, they just told me to be me. And being her is being Raven Baxter.
And sometimes you have to know what your niche is. Like, you know, you want to see, I'm not comparing myself to these people, but I'm also aware. It's like, Eddie Murphy is Eddie Murphy. Even if he's playing a girl, even if he's playing an old man, you're going to see him. And that's just how it's going to be. Mm-hmm. No offense, but Al Pacino is Al Pacino.
Right.
No matter what character he does, he's Al Pacino. Then you have caricature actors, those Broadway thespians.
But like, Blanchett is like, she gets to be like a neurotic mm-hmm. Long Island woman in Blue Jasmine. And then she gets to be a powerful lesbian conductor who's an American. Like, she gets to play all these things. Do you have a hunger to do that? To, like, really transform? Or are you happier to stay where you are?
No, I'm really okay. I got my check. I'm good. Jared Leto's one of the other ones you're like all over the place. Yeah. And I'm fine with it. You know, also because I'm not trying to continue to be an actor
Christian
for the rest
Bale.
Of my life. Christian Bale is so good at that.
Good. I know.
He's so,
I
the transformation of it all.
But, like, I want to direct. I like getting other people to do that. I like finding the shot for that. I like organizing the shots for that. And I think that's why I was in the industry for as long as I was, so that I could understand actor conversation. And then I have a wife who's teaching me suit conversation, and I can blend the two to really create content that allows those actors, whether they want to be themselves with different words or other caricatures, to do that. I don't think I'm cool with
it. It's so interesting how it works, because I'm thinking as a viewer, right? Just like as an audience, part of an audience, I'm like, who do I kind of do that to? And I feel like Jennifer Aniston for me, like she will always be Rachel. Like Eddie, and it's kind of with Sarah Jessica Parker too. And it's like Jessica Parker for me is Carrie Bradshaw. But
except for Hocus Pocus.
No, I mean, but even in Hocus Pocus, sure. Like I have, you know,
it's a little different.
Sarah in Hocus Pocus. But I was watching, you know, Girls Just Want to Have Fun, where she was running around dancing and bopping with Helen Hunt. And it's so interesting that, like, she's, or when she was Annie, like, there's this long history of a career of many characters of a great actor, but it's like, you are Carrie Bradshaw.
Right.
And
right.
from here on out, you'll be Carrie Bradshaw. And it's just interesting how that happens.
Well, so it's what you hope for. You hope for the big hit, but then you also hope you get paid really well for it, because that will follow you. Shaking that mantle, it's almost impossible. So you may as well embrace it, or you know, pivot. We do have to go. I wanted to ask Miranda one last question. You want to tell us about your podcast that's coming up?
Yes, we do. We are so excited.
First of all, she's so excited that you did. Thank you, Julie. I witnessed that. Check mark.
I just want to ask Miranda, because Miranda, this is Miranda's baby. This is her idea. She pitched it. She got it up and going. It will be the two of you, but take it away, Miranda.
Thanks, Julie. We are really, really excited. It's launching over the summer. We have some really exciting guests showing up on it. Julie, you're one of them. And it's just really cool. We're thrilled. iHeart's been a great partner. And
it's a multifaceted, without telling too much, it's like a multifaceted show. You get a little of everything. You get a couple games. You get a couple real in-depth conversations.
One thing about Raven is Raven says, despite the fact that Chad is like, oh, you're so out there and you speak your truth and da-da-da-da, Raven actually often says that she doesn't like using her words and doesn't have the words. So when podcast came into the to our ether, she was like, no, I don't listen to them. I don't like them. I don't want to do them. So we had to make it fun for Raven, which means a game. So we have lots of games and lots of interesting things. And we want everyone who listens to walk away either feeling blissfully entertained or learning something new or hearing something that they relate to. So we're covering a lot of bases.
Yeah.
It'll be cool.
It'll be fun. I can't wait for you to come on.
I can't wait too. And thank you. And you know, maybe Chad.
And congratulations. Yeah, maybe so.
Oh, thanks, Chad.
Oh, you guys can come on together.
I totally can. Chad, come on.
We'll fight. We'll do what y'all.
We'll do what you.
You guys can fight. We'll negotiate.
We're
going to
therapy you
too. We'll negotiate.
Yeah.
We'll negotiate.
We'll negotiate. There it is.
Great. We love that.
Thank you guys so much.
Thanks y'all so much.
Very, like, you are a ball of energy, the two of you bouncing back and forth. It's been super fun to watch and listen to. And thank you for sharing some real vulnerable moments in there. I hope that you are kind to one another. And, like, I mean, gentle about if anything was said that was new.
Oh, no.
Oh, no, we're fine.
Okay, don't worry, Julie.
We're good. We're fine.
We're totally fine.
All right.
Nothing.
And thank you for creating such a safe space.
No, it's not fucking space.
Nothing that you said will ever.
And by the way, I just want to say that doing The View, doing any talk show makes me want to crap my pants. And I just look at Whoopi whenever I can, because it's like she holds the world of sanity in her. And I go in and I touch her. And when I leave, she always gives me the biggest hug. And that, I don't, I just, I just think that she is like the mother from another mother that I wish I had.
You are exactly right. She is the rock. She knew that we were going to get married. She helped me through my troubles during that time. She's one of the most beautiful, wonderful, amazing humans on this earth.
1,000%. 1,000%.
She is.
All right. Well, thank you, ladies. Thank you so much. We both look forward to being on your podcast.